You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 51st week of the year from December 16th to December 22nd. It's the second to last podcast of the year. Going from Deuteronomy 29:9 to Deuteronomy 30:19. So we're at this moment in Deuteronomy, we're very near the end of the five books of Moses here, and we're really near the end of Moses' life. This is the part of the talk that Moses is giving to the children of Israel on the last day of his life. He says, in 29:9 to 29:11, he says, "You are standing today, all of you, before God, your God, the heads of your tribes, your elders and your officers, all the men of Israel, your small children, your women, and your proselyte who is in the midst of your camp, from the hewer of your wood to the drawer of your water, for you to pass into the covenant of God." So Moses tells the people that they're all standing before God, ready to pass into the covenant of God. It's the last day of his life, and this is probably one of the last moments of his life, really. And he's telling the Israelites they are standing before God. Who is standing before God? Everyone. Moses makes a point of saying that this includes everyone, all of Israelite society, from the heads of the tribes to the drawers of the water. Everyone is included. And we are all included too. We are all included in God's covenant with humanity. We are all equal before God, and we are all standing before God. We should keep this in mind. Doesn't matter who we are, God still loves us. At the same time, we are all standing before God no matter what we're doing. This is good, but it can also be terrifying, right? Whatever we do, for good or bad, is done in God's presence. Think about that. God sees all. God is very forgiving, though, so we can be forgiven if we ask for mercy from God and work on ourselves. Deuteronomy 29:13 and 14 says, "Not with you alone do I seal this covenant and this imprecation, but with whoever is here, standing with us today, and with whoever is not here with us today." So what does this mean, that God is sealing the covenant with people who are not there? One interpretation is that God is sealing the covenant with all the future generations of the Israelites who were not alive at this time. And this was an important idea at the moment because, you know, the generation of the wilderness was going to die off, and their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren were going to be living in the promised land. And there was the potential for the descendants of this group to say, "Hey, you know, I wasn't there. I didn't make any covenant with God. Whatever these rules are in the Bible, they don't apply to me because I wasn't there." And what God is saying is, you don't get that escape clause. I'm making this covenant with all future generations of Israelites, and really with all future generations of humanity, that if you follow God's law, you will have God's will for you. And so another way to look at it, though, this is it's a permanent promise. It's not just like a warning. It's a permanent promise that the land will be theirs if they adhere to the laws of the Bible. It's not an entitlement. It's an earned privilege, but it's accessible to every person. And the same idea applies to you even if you missed opportunities to understand God's covenant earlier in life due to, you know, circumstances that you were in. It doesn't matter. Really, the covenant still applies even if you weren't there to hear it originally. If you have a soul, you can be part of God's covenant with humanity. Your soul was included in the covenant, whether or not you were alive at the time or aware of what was going on. This is a reason to be hopeful and do the work of recovery. Deuteronomy 29:17 contains another warning against the worshiping idols. It says, "Perhaps there is among you a man or woman or a family or tribe whose heart turns away today from being with God, our God, to go and serve the gods of those nations. Perhaps there is among you a root flourishing with gall and wormwood." So this warning against idolatry has an interesting symbolism. It's really referring to the insidious way that bad thinking can take over when people turn away from God. And I think we see this in recovery. People don't usually wake up one day and decide to do bad stuff. Like, sober people don't say, "Well, you know, I think I'm going to go get drunk today for no particular reason." There's usually a process of disconnection from God and from the program, the fellowship, and family, and on and on. It usually takes a little while. And the verse, which is talking about idolatry, not alcoholism, but it's really kind of a similar trend in a person's life. The verse compares the process to a rotten root that spreads to the entire plant, turning it to wormwood. And I think we see this in addiction or recovery. You know, what seems like a minor thing can trigger divergence from sobriety. You know, the small things. You know, you yell at somebody in traffic, you get angry with somebody in work, you let things get to you. These little slippery triggers, right? They poison the roots of your well-being, and they can start to lead you astray. So I think one of the things to work on in recovery is to be aware of yourself and notice when you're being set off by little things, because these things are not always little, or they can be signals that bad things are going on. Like, I notice for myself, this is my own personal barometer, if I get impatient with people when I'm waiting in a line, like at the post office, that tells me there's something wrong with my program. Because, I mean, honestly, nobody likes to be waiting in a line at the post office, but, you know, there's a way to deal with it and there's a way not to deal with it. And if it starts to get irritating to you to the point where it's really affecting your peace of mind, that to me, that's saying, you know, there's something wrong. You got to turn that over. That's what I think the program would recommend. Turn that feeling over, because you don't have any use for that feeling. Deuteronomy 29:18 introduces an idea we're going to talk about a couple different ways. It says, "And it will be that when he hears the words of the imprecation," so what he's talking about here, what God is saying, the imprecation is referring back to the previous thing we talked about, Deuteronomy 20:17, which says, "You'll be a man whose heart turns away from being with God." So when he hears that warning, he says, "And it will be when you hear the words of the imprecation, he will bless himself in his heart, saying, 'Peace will be with me, though I walk as my heart sees fit,' thereby adding the watered to the thirsty." Okay, so this is a sort of a puzzling verse, but we're going to unpack it and talk about it. It's got a lot of interesting ideas for recovery contained in it. This phrase, "adding water to the thirsty," what does that mean? So it's referring back to 29:17, Deuteronomy 29:17, where Moses warns the people not to turn away from God and serve idols. So in this case, if the person has a warning not to observe idols, but he ignores it. So in this verse, he ignores it, saying, "He blesses himself in his heart, saying, 'Peace will be with me, though I walk as my heart sees fit.'" Unchecked, your heart can lead you astray, leading you to bless yourself and talk yourself into feeling as if you're totally fine. The watered refers to unintentional sins, meaning things that we might do when we're drunk or high. The thirsty is in the intentional sin, the stuff we do deliberately and we know is wrong. And what the verse is saying is that God will punish us for both unintentional and intentional sins if we delude ourselves into thinking that we are in charge and we can do as we please. So it's sort of a complicated idea, but saying, if you're the kind of person who says to himself, I'm going to do whatever I want, I'm going to do as my heart sees fit, I'm going to go serve idols, I'm going to ignore the advice of the Bible and do what I please, what the verse is saying is that this will take you from unintentional sin to intentional sin, meaning that in the beginning, if we start to act out in this sort of way, we may not be fully in the mode of sin. We might accidentally sin, or we might get drunk and do something wrong, but then at some point, most people switch, and they become aware of what they're doing, and they don't stop, or they can't stop, and they do things that they know are wrong, and it gets worse and worse, causes shame and more acting out and so forth. And so this is not a good path for sobriety, obviously. So we need to work on turning that kind of thing over. So continuing with this verse, where it says, you know, and it will be that when he hears the words of the imprecation, he will bless himself in his heart, saying, peace will be with me, though I walk as my heart sees fit, thereby adding the water to the thirsty. You know, for people who are raised in the 60s and the 70s, which includes me and a lot of other people in the program, people will, from that era, will be familiar with the notion of following one's heart. Follow your heart. Follow your bliss. That was a saying that was very popular at the time. It says, at the time, it was presented as like the ultimate path to happiness. To follow one's heart was the way to achieve personal fulfillment and throw off the shackles of conformity and society. And, you know, there is some truth in this idea, right? You know, but it can also be a recipe for disaster. There's a fine line between respecting our own and each other's individuality, right? And there's a difference between that and succumbing to narcissism. There's a fine line between, you know, respecting yourself and understanding that you have a unique heart and you have a unique life and things that you want to do, and falling into narcissism. This was the problem of what they called the me generation. Generation I grew up in, and it can be in the end a kind of a self-worship, which is really antithetical to spiritual health. Self-worship is really a kind of idolatry. If you worship yourself, there isn't always a lot of room for God in your life, and you end up potentially in self-indulgent behavior and bad behavior, addictive behavior, treating other people badly. You know, we've all seen this. Maybe we even lived through this, you know. So with faith and a sense of good God consciousness, we can learn to understand who we truly are and our true individual natures while adhering to spiritual discipline in ways that lead to growth and health. So continuing with this verse, just getting further into this unusual phrase, adding water to the thirsty, you know, it has to do with this idea of the difference between intentional and unintentional sin. You know, a person who is absorbed in idol worship is at risk of piling unintentional sins on top of other more obvious transgressions. Both, of course, this is the opposite of what we just said. So if you can go both ways, you can go from accidentally sinning to deliberately sinning, or the other way around. You can start to sort of, you could be doing something that's wrong, like idol worship, or the modern equivalent of idol worship, and then you can sort of start to do unintentional things, sort of, you know, building up more and more of sort of a heavenly punishment for yourself. Both, you know, unintentional and intentional sins are bad for spiritual health and recovery. And I think that the takeaway for us in recovery from this verse, trying to distinguish between intentional and unintentional sin, is you can relate it to the idea of trying to excuse your behavior by saying that you were intoxicated. You know, you can say, I was drunk, you know, so sorry, I did something wrong. But I was drunk and I couldn't control myself. I'm sorry, you know, I hurt someone's feelings, I wrecked a car, I killed somebody, you know, bad things, right? under the influence of alcohol or drugs. And maybe we didn't even know what we did. I mean, we've certainly seen that in the rooms, right? People, they have no idea what they've been up to. And, you know, it doesn't let you off the hook. You know, letting yourself off the hook for unintentional transgressions is a delusion of addiction. If anything, it makes the sin worse. One of the purposes of the steps is to force us to examine ourselves and chronicle just this sort of thing. If you know what you've done, you can set about making it right, both for yourself and for other people. Deuteronomy 30:19 contains one of the most famous lines in the Bible, but it just says, "I call heaven and earth today to bear witness against you. I have placed life and death before you, blessing and curse, and you shall choose life so that you will live, you and your offspring." So there's a couple of this phrase, heaven and earth, obviously is very famous in the English language, but also this idea of choose life, which is really the, if you had to sum up the entire Judeo-Christian tradition in two words, it would be choose life. And I think that this is, you have to understand that there are many religions, I'm not judging them, but I'm just saying it's just a contrast. There are many religions in the world that emphasize death, that are really framed around death. Judeo-Christian tradition is framed around life. You know, honoring the living, saving lives, feeding the hungry, helping people live, you know, treating the sick. You know, and one of the sort of ironies of it, if you've been involved with the Jewish community, is that the phrase to life, which is l'chaim, is also a drinking salute. Is that the word, salute? It's what you say when you have a drink. Instead of cheers, Jewish people often say l'chaim, to life. And it's also, if you talk to a Jewish person who has an alcohol problem, they may have been told in their life, hey, you know, you got to take it easy with the l'chaims. You've been overdoing it. Too many l'chaims. So it's kind of a funny irony. But this is also great advice for recovery. God places life and death before us, a blessing and a curse. Which shall we choose? The choice should be easy, right? Let's choose life, right? But most of us have gotten it wrong at some point in our lives. We've chosen death. We say this. We've all heard this and been through this. You know, this addiction will take us to the cemetery if we don't deal with it. And, you know, I know I certainly have had friends who've died from addiction, and it's very sad. They whether they wanted to or not, they chose death over life. So if we're lucky, we can get sober and find our way to the program. And, you know, wouldn't it be great, like, if you were your first meeting and someone sat down with you and said, listen, I call heaven and earth today to bear witness against you. I've placed life and death before you, a blessing and a curse. Choose life, right? Heaven and earth, the entire universe is a witness to this. That's what God is saying. The entire universe is a witness to the fact that you have a choice between life and death and blessing and curse. And what God is hoping we're going to do is find a way to choose life.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast, daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com